morning. Hope your Sunday's off to a great start. My name is Brittany Caffey. I'm here with Rick and Jill Van Dyvendyke. Welcome to Garden Talk. If you have a question, and I know a lot of you do at this time of year, feel free to give us a call or send us a text at 1-877-332-8255. How are you guys?
Welcome.
I better turn on your mic, I guess. It's been a while.
Welcome, Brittany. It has been a while.
Okay, so of course, as always, I will monopolize your time because I always have my own garden questions. Good. So in our yard, we have two apple trees right now.
Yep.
Fantastic. They're doing really well. They're growing, not producing quite yet, but we'll get there. We want to add two more fruit trees to our yard. And I am having a very hard time deciding what we should do. When it comes to like plums, I don't know if I would get the actual use out of what the trees would eventually produce. Apricots, I don't know if they would be worth planting. What are your thoughts?
Apricots, especially in the city, you'll be fine. Out in the country, you won't get very, they bloom so early that usually the frosts get them, right? But in the city, we got a microclimate, you'd be okay. There's lots of people in the cities that say, yeah, the apricots, they've been getting lots of them. Plums, same thing. It really comes down to basically what preferences, like you were saying, will you use them, right? Now, one thing you got to remember is that you said you're going to plant two.
Yeah.
Right? So because whatever you decide, you need to cross-pollinate, okay, so that you can get a good crop out of it. So like right now you have two apples. So if you added two more apples, then you got no problem with pollinization, right? You're all good there. But if you do plums, you could have two plums, you know, two apricots, and some apricots will produce, are self-pollinating, but they don't produce very good self-pollinating. They produce better when there's two different varieties. Actually, so
now something I usually like to consider too, Brittany, when you're thinking about a yard and the practicality of it, and you're saying, okay, well, I don't know if I'm going to use it. So then my question I would throw back to you, Rick, is if I don't use it, which one of these is going to be the least messy for me?
Yes, very true.
Because I know like a cherry tree can be quite messy and leave cherries all over the place. A pear tree, I know we have a few of those. Those are very lovely trees. And you can eat the pear. They're a little bit more firm. But they're not too messy.
But the tree is beautiful.
The tree is beautiful. What about the apricot and the plum? Which one would be a little less messy?
Yeah, either one of them.
Either one of them.
Yeah, either one less. I mean, pears you get lots. Like a ton of them, right? They're not as big as the big, you know, pears you see in the grocery store, but I mean, you get a lot of them. That's a good point though, Jill, is that what she's saying is that, okay, what other purposes other than plant with a purpose, okay, like for eating? Well, it might be for privacy, because I had two apple trees on the back of my house I had that they were just there because there was other decks behind me. So they served where I got fruit off them, but I could not see through them in the summertime. So, I mean, it made a great privacy trees, and they weren't huge trees either. You know, they weren't a giant poplar or, you know, a big linden or something like that. They were just a medium-sized tree, you know, that only grow about, you know, 20 feet tall maximum. Some of them will be 14 feet tall. And so, but it's still, that's all I needed for that privacy. So those are the kind of things. So I guess, that's going to come down to if you love making apple pie, then plant two more apple trees.
Four apple trees feels like an awful lot. Thankfully, I do have three kids, whether it comes to eating them or cleaning up the mess, I'll just have to put my kids to work. But I think we'll probably have to just rock, paper, scissors on it. It feels like six of one, half a dozen of the other.
It really is. I mean,
the trees are all beautiful. Like the plum tree in the early spring is such a stunning tree. Yep. Apricot, a little bit more exotic fruit, so that's kind of cool.
If you go with the pear, it's a bigger plant, so it takes up more space. Okay. Yeah. But it's a beautiful plant. Lots of tons and tons of flowers in the spring.
Perfect. Okay. We're going to head to the text line now. If you have a question, feel free to give us a call or send us a text 1-877-332-8255. This is a text from Brittany from Balgoni. She says she's new to gardening and she has what she thinks is an ornamental plum tree that has suckers popping up everywhere. She says she thinks a few weeks ago you may have mentioned how to get rid of them in the best way, not pulling them. But what product should she use to get rid of these suckers?
Yeah, one thing about the suckers is that you're never going to eliminate them, okay? You're going to control. So basically what you do every time you prune them off, you're making a stool bed, which means when I make one cut, I create two more new growths. Okay?
It's like gray hairs.
We don't have any of those over here.
No, none.
So what you want to do is you want to basically cut them down to the ground. So they're down to the ground, and then you get a product called Top Gun or Advance, either one of them. And they're basically a herbicidal soap and a herbicidal vinegar, okay? And what you do is you hang your little sprayer on your lawnmower. That's all I do. Because what happens, it reminds you that every week I'm going to look for a little leaf coming out of the ground. And if I see that little leaf, I'm just going to go give it a little pst, and that'll burn that leaf off, and then it'll stop that growth without causing the stooling. Okay. And so, but you said that's why I look at it. Don't wait till that little leaf turns into a stem. That's, you know, 12, 14, 18, 20 inches tall. Do it right when you see the leaves popping out of the soil.
Now, will that Advance also burn the grass that's around it too?
It'll burn anything. It won't kill the roots of anything you touch with it, but it'll burn the top. So if you hit an annual flower, yeah, it'll kill the plant. Yeah,
it's just good to know that so that if you're going around with it on your lawnmower and spraying, if it's covered in there, you're going to have brown spots.
You'll have a little
until you mow the next time.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
It'll grow back again.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right. Another text here from Neil. I believe that I have spider mites in my pine trees. I see the webs very small. Can I spray them with a sulfur spray now or should I wait? I've watched some branches go from brown to bare.
Yeah. No, dude, as soon as you notice any spider mites, go at it right away. Even just blasting cold water at them, you know, anything like that. The sulfur helps. They don't like the sulfur. Okay. But, it makes them to want to go away. Right. And, cause things like malathion, you can't really get anymore. Like some of those things are disappearing that work good. You can use things like Andol and that. It works not bad, but not 100%, but that's okay too, because you're never gonna get rid of all the spider mite. You just want to control the numbers so it doesn't cause all the needles to fall off of your plant. Okay.
Okay, speaking of making things want to go away, we have a beautiful lily in our front flower bed, and the lily beetles absolutely destroyed it this year. So what I was doing was just grabbing them as I saw them and squishing them. Yep. Is there a product that next year I can get ahead of them?
Well, Brittany, what you have to do is next year in like that early June season, look at the underside of the leaves, and that's where you're going to see the egg sacs. And they're like little, they'll be in little rows. And take a lint roller.
And they're orange.
Take a lint roller and roll those off or tap them off onto a piece of paper or whatever. And that's how you can get rid of them a little bit more. There is a product called Bug X Out, which is a pyrethrin product, kind of like what's in Endol. And you can spray that, but you can't spray in the stage when they're blooming or budding, or else you're going to ruin the blooms and buds. So you can do that early
on. And you have to spray the underside
of leaves, because that's where
it's a contact.
Are.
Yeah.
But I would say search in the early season when you can get the eggs, and then you won't have the beetles later.
And then also another thing you do too is the beetles come out of the ground.
Yeah.
And so you can sprinkle some diatomaceous earth around the soil also, which is basically crush up seashells, and then that gets into their joints and everything else and dehydrates them.
Okay, perfect. That'll be my plan for next year. Okay, we're going to head to the phone line now. We've got Nadine on the line from McLean. Good morning, Nadine.
Well, good morning. I have a question. I want to trim my Saskatoons down. They're so tall I can't reach them anymore. They're ready now, but they're too tall. The birds are having a good time, but when is the best time to cut them down? Early in the summer or late in the fall?
No, late in the fall after the leaves start turning color or actually fall off. Okay.
Okay.
And
how short?
You can. I would leave them if they're really tall. I would leave them at, don't go any shorter than 4 feet tall.
Okay.
Okay. That gives you a lot of branches at the bottom to recreate your plant, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you can cut them down to the ground, but it takes so long for them to come back.
Oh, no, I don't want them that short.
So I mean,
4 feet, you say. Okay.
Even 6 feet is perfect, you know, if they're, because they're going to be 12 feet tall, right?
Yeah, they are. Just about that now.
Most of them are, except for Smokey. Smokey's a little bit shorter, but most of them, Teason, Martin, all those Saskatoons, they're all grow about 12 feet tall. And
yeah,
like you said, all the berries at the top. So yeah, and like that's what a lot of the Saskatoon farms do. They keep them down to the height so that they can either pick them or they can use a mechanical harvester. So yeah. And so that keeping them down to the height you want is perfect.
What's your favorite thing to make with the Saskatoons?
Pie.
Pie? Oh, yummy pie. I love the Saskatoon berry crisp.
Oh, Saskatoons are just lovely things. Mm-hmm. And the birds think they're lovely too, so I kind of have a race with them.
I love it.
Awesome. Thanks so much for the call, Nadine.
Thank you very much.
All right, if you have a question, feel free to give us a call, 1-877-332-8255. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with more of your questions. I'm Brittany Caffey, here with Rick and Jill Van Dyvendyke, and you're listening to Garden Talk on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME. Bit of a gloomy, smoky start to this Sunday, and it's kind of a cooler day across the entire province, unfortunately.
It's great for those crops, let me tell you.
And it's a perfect gardening day, because when it's plus 30, it's actually not a good day to go out there and do some pruning. Nobody really wants to be weeding in their garden, but on a cool day, it's good for the plants. If you want to transplant something right now, I mean, you want to be doing that on a cool day. Getting that stuff from the nursery and putting in the ground so those roots aren't exposed to the heat.
I was building an outdoor shower yesterday, and so I was just out there and just puttering away. And
we'll talk about that outdoor shower. It's kind of cool.
I'm intrigued now as to why Rick needs an outdoor shower. We'll hear more about that in a little bit. I'm Brittany Caffey, here with Rick and Jill Van Dyvendyke. If you have a question, feel free to give us a call, 1-877-332-8255. And with that, we'll head to the phone lines right now. Here's Tom in Regina. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, and you're exactly right. It's a perfect day to be sitting in my garden.
Yep.
Just a question about carrots. My carrots, they're getting really tall, and I'm worried about, you know, all tops and no bottoms. Is cutting them back a good idea?
If you want to cut the tops off, you can cut a little bit off the tops, but don't cut them all the way down for sure. So, like, you can cut about a third off the tops.
Yeah, that's what thinking of doing.
The bigger thing is make sure you're not over fertilizing them. That's the bigger thing. Then we get a lot of tops because there's too many nutrients making all that green, and then they don't actually need a lot of nutrients to create the bottoms. And then making sure that they're thinned out so you don't have a lot of them tight together. So if you do those things, I think you should be fine. But I don't trim the tops more than a third.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking of doing.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. You have a great day.
You too.
What exactly does trimming the tops back of the carrot do?
It just helps promote, the plant's not going to put as much energy into creating those leaves and doing the photosynthesis. It will put more energy into the ground.
So you'll actually get a nice carrot instead of a little nubbin.
And like I said, it's not something you have to do. It's just if you're seeing a lot of growth, maybe will help stress that plant a little bit and put some energy into the ground.
A lot of it is because, like you were talking about, Jill, they haven't been thinned out, so they're stretching, right?
Yeah.
So they're all tight together. Instead of bushing, they're just stretching.
We'll see a lot of greenery sometimes if it's in a little bit more of a shady location as well, too, because then the heat's not going down to the ground. It's just going to produce the greenery because that's what the plant can do easy.
All right. They go for the easy thing.
I don't blame them.
All right. We've got Gail on the line now in Regina. Good morning, Gail.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Good morning. Do you remember in the 80s we had Calamix pellets to sterilize soil?
No, never used to use that. But
Calamix?
Calamix, you said?
Calamix.
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 Never used to use that.
Well, I just have a really big area between my garage and my fence that is only rock. And Roundup isn't doing the trick at all.
Well, Roundup only works spraying on green leaves, right?
Yes, and that's what I do.
And then what happens is that with rock, you still get fabric underneath it, and you still get lots of dust in there, and you still get weed seeds blowing in, and they'll grow back up again, right?
No, there's no fabric. I just had it landscaped last year, but I remember it used to sterilize the soil for up to 3 years, just on unused areas.
Yeah, like all the soil sterilants. We used to be a lot of soil sterilants we used to sell way back when, right?
Right.
But those
are
all
not available anymore.
They were all taken off the market because what had happened is that a tree, let's say, doesn't have a border of a fence, right? So the roots go all through and even underneath your garage pad and all that kind of stuff. And so what happened when you had that sterilizations, you had a lot of problems with it affecting plants in the area. Right?
Yes.
And also, if there's a big rainstorm, I mean, it was sometimes it wouldn't stay still. It would actually, you know, flow with the water, right?
Right. And I remember we used to spread the pellets, but then we would water it in.
Yep, you'd water it in. But then sometimes if you got a rainstorm with a lot of water, it would move those pellets or move the soil that was, you know, had a problem. So that's why that's why recommending in a residential area, it's really iffy to do, right? I mean, in some commercial areas like these, I know SAS Power and that, when they have a big transmission area, you know, where the big power generating, you know, like what do they call those?
A transformer.
Transformer stations and that. Because
right.
It's all gravel, they can't have any stuff in there. Then they used to do that kind of stuff. But and I think there is some stuff that's available commercially, but residentially there's nothing. But you can try that as long as you've got to be careful. Like I said, you just have to be careful because that also can help
it changes the pH.
It changes the
soil.
pH of the soil. It does a whole
the
bunch
composition
of other
the soil,
things, right?
Everything.
Yeah.
So you have to make sure that what you're doing is not going to affect other things around it.
No, there is no other living plants around.
Okay, perfect.
Nothing. So.
Yep.
So, how do I get a hold of it?
That I don't have a clue.
Could I get in touch with a farmer, maybe?
I think you'd have to go to an ag center,
and
see what they have to say. They'd probably be your first bet
of
where to find
Sounds
something.
Good.
Yeah.
Yep.
Awesome. Okay, good luck, Gail. Thanks for the call. All right, speaking of gravel, I have been seeing on TikTok and Instagram people talking about using, like, rock and mulch glue in
yes.
their yards
yes.
to keep everything in place. Is this actually a good idea?
It can be a good idea if you're doing maybe a pathway. I would not necessarily put it as a mulch around your plants, because what's going to happen is you're going to have raining and runoff issues, and you're going to have watering issues, because if it rains, where's all your water going to go? It's going to run off of that area instead of going towards the plants. So it's just kind of like the same thing of landscape fabric too, right? If you put landscape fabric down, your organic matter is not going to be breaking down into the soil anymore, and so those plants aren't going to be getting those natural nutrients. So yeah, you're messing with the natural things, but maybe if you're doing a pathway and you want those rocks to stay in place on a pathway, great, use that.
Perfect. All right, we're going to go back to the phones. If you have a question, call 1-877-332-8255. We have Sharon on the line in Neville. Hi, Sharon.
Hi, good morning. Hey, we finally in this little dry pocket we've had a couple of rains within the past 10 days.
Perfect.
Time to celebrate.
Yeah. It is, because we had 3/4 inch, and then yesterday we had 4/10. And that's been over the past 7-8 days. And you can just see how the stuff in my garden that was limping along, I was keeping it, you know, wet, but still just limping along and getting, you know, browning of some of the bottom leaves because of the intense heat. And now it just looks like a different garden.
Yep.
Anyway, my carrots are coming along quite well. The tops, they were slow to very, very slow and here to germinate. And I guess the top parts might be, I don't know, 6 inches, 8 inches, something like that. Anyway. When is the best time to thin them? Now, or should I wait until I can, they're finger size so that I can eat the little ones? Or when is the best time to thin these guys?
I like do them as early as possible. Carrots don't like their root system disturbed too much. So if you can do it early on so that there's a little bit more space between the carrots, that's the best time to do it.
Okay. Do you have any specific, like, like a centimeter, or how much to thin them?
I usually like to have like a pinky width between each little stem coming out of the ground.
Okay, that is exactly the type of information I wanted today, and I want to thank you very much. Oh, by the way, Rick, I bought an apple tree this spring, and I know you had been talking about your 3 favorites. Anyway, they had one that I did recognize, and it was called September Ruby.
Yes.
Guess what? I've got one.
Perfect. That's a great one.
I know, because you've been ringing its praises for years.
Especially for the rural areas, because it's very hardy.
Yes, and that's what we need out here, because we get, you know, cold, we get a lot of wind, and, you know,
Perfect. Hey, thank you so much for the call, Sharon. Hope you enjoy the rest of your Sunday. We're going to take a quick break. If you have a question, give us a call, 1-877-332-8255. I'm Brittany Cafe here with Rick and Jill Van Dyvendyke, and you're listening to Garden Talk on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME. I'm Brittany Cafe here with Rick and Jill Van Dyvendyke. You're listening to Garden Talk. If you have a question, give us a call, 1-877-332-8255. A bit of a chilly day, which, according to Jill, is the perfect day to sit in your garden.
To work in your garden.
There
and
we go.
Sit in your garden.
Yes, both work, then sit. All right, we're going to head right to the phone line. We've got Helen in Saskatoon. Good morning, Helen.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Okay, my tomato plants only have two tomatoes on the plants. Why aren't there more?
It's been a late season. My tomatoes are behind as well. The start of the season was really slow, but we just need some heat now. I mean, some of the province, they're doing a lot better, but I know up around Saskatoon, they're a lot slower. But in the last week, mine have bolted.
Do you still have flowers that are developed on your plant, or is it just green with two tomatoes?
There are some flowers, but I noticed some flowers are drying up.
Mm-hmm. So just make sure you keep, the biggest thing right now is keep your watering consistent, especially when it's getting hot and then it's cold and it's hot and it's cold. You want to make sure that you're checking your soil and making sure that you're keeping it evenly moist.
Don't be doing automatic, you know, the same way watering all the time with the way these fluctuations in temperatures. You got to be actually sticking your finger into the soil, seeing whether it needs water or not.
Yeah. And if you want to as well, just because it's later season, is make sure you be the bee. Take a little Q-tip and sort of ruffle those blossoms a little bit to make sure the pollination comes through.
And fertilizer, using a tomato fertilizer, like an organic with lots of calcium and that kind of stuff in them, will actually get them catching up, because we got lots of time yet, you know, between now and when you're going to be harvesting. So there's lots of time for those plants to catch up and give you lots.
So calcium nitrate, I can give them some of that?
Yep, give them some calcium and like I said, some boron, magnesium. There's lots of other like organic that just doesn't have a ton of nitrogen, because you don't want to put a ton of nitrogen on. Mm-hmm. But okay, you need all the other, you know, a little bit of nitrogen, a little bit of phosphorus, and then some potassium, a little bit more potassium, but then all the other micronutrients is huge.
Okay. I'll try that.
Okay.
Awesome.
Okay.
Good luck, Helen. Be the bee. I have now enlisted my daughter, Elizabeth. She'll be turning 8 in August, but I learned this trick from you guys a few years ago, and now my daughter, Elizabeth, is my bee. So I'll give her a Q-tip, and she goes out and messes with the little tomato flowers, and we're getting some tomatoes.
Yep,
so
absolutely.
Elizabeth is my bee. All right, if you have a question, give us a call, 1-877-332-8255. Back to the phone lines with Jim in Martinsville. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. I've got a question. I think I'm going to know the answer. My tower poplar trees are shooting out sawdust, so I assume there's something in there, and is it too late to do anything?
Poplar borer. If you see the holes, they're shape of a D, about the size of a ballpoint pen head, okay? And it'll be right above where the sawdust is. Take a product called Dr. Doom. And it has it's an aerosol can, and it has a little straw on it, just like the WD-40 can does, and spray it into the holes. Now, you're going to get some of them, but hopefully you can, you know, get them under control, because it's a death sentence for those trees if you just let them go rapid. Okay.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
And if half the tree is dead already, then I suggest just remove the tree before it affects the rest of them.
Yeah. Well, they're all spraying it. The tops aren't dead yet, so maybe I got a chance.
Try that Dr. Doom, and then spray it into the holes. Actually, if you can find some, there's ones in the yellow can. That's a 0.25, but if you can get the brown can one, which is 0.5, it's even better, okay? And it has more residual, so that when the bugs move through the cavities, then it'll get them that way, okay?
Okay.
And then reapply every 14 days.
Okay.
Wonderful.
Okay.
Awesome. Thanks for the call, Jim. All right. During the last break, we were talking a little bit about CalMix and someone was asking where to get it. We got a text from someone named Maria in Saskatoon who says, in response to the caller inquiring about Calmex, it's no longer available.
Yeah, that's I
stopped being manufactured quite a few years ago.
I haven't heard about that for such a long time. So,
and I've never heard about it, probably because I was born in the 80s. So.
I wasn't even a twinkle in my father's eye yet. All right, here is a text from Tom in Humboldt. I watered my plants with too much Miracle-Gro. The leaves are falling off. Will they die, or what can I do to correct my mistake?
Well, if you've done too much Miracle-Gro, you're going to see, first of all, burning in the leaves. So you'll see that the leaves will start maybe turning purplish color or even a black color.
Yep.
And then getting crispy.
On the tips and in between the veins, you'll see it.
Now, if you've over-fertilized a plant, the best thing to do is leach that fertilizer out of your soil. So giving it a good amount of water along with your fertilizing, that's going to help your plant.
And aerating the soil, because a lot of extra water is also going to cause, you know, a problem with,
you
know.
Yeah, you don't want to overwater and all of a sudden your plants are saturated and they can't soak up any nutrients anymore. So you might be able to save it. Any of the leaves that are crispy and crunchy, you can prune those ones off, and that then the plant's going to sort of be promoting some new growth too. Depends on the type of plant. That does it say what type of plant it is at all?
No, it doesn't say.
If it's an annual, if you give it some pinching and pruning, sometimes it makes the plant bushier to start off with. But usually, if it's a vegetative plant, to over Miracle-Gro a plant or over fertilize it, it's quite difficult. So unless you've poured it straight on the leaves, then that will cause burning of the leaves. So I'd say give a plant a little bit of pruning, make sure you leach the soil a little bit by watering it, and then make sure you aerate the soil so you're not overwatering the plant as well.
Perfect. Okay, here is a text from Jeremy. I have two sour cherry trees I just put in the ground. They're growing. They have some berries, but they disappear. What happened?
The feathered fens friends love them. Usually the birds love them as soon as they find them. And so that's why you'll find out if you have a lot of birds, different types of birds in your area. Like a lot of people grow hascaps, they start fruiting, they're ripen in the end of June. Well, if the waxwings or robins find them, they'll say, oh my.
And if you see a crop of berries, you usually see bird netting top of them.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's what you can also do, is put some stakes out, put some bird netting, and that will keep those birds away so that you can enjoy the
crop.
Let
the bees in and all that kind of stuff, right?
Yeah.
So,
I have seen with strawberries, my neighbor actually does this. They have like little rocks that they have painted to look like strawberries that they leave in their berry planter. Will that actually make a difference?
I've never heard that one before.
I don't know what the logic behind it is.
I think it's just for looks.
I think that's just fun.
Just decorative.
Just fun.
It's fun. Fun thing to do.
I think everyone can relate to the berry versus bird struggle. My father-in-law, Glen Cafe owns and operates the Fruit Basket near Spiritwood, and they do strawberries. And he said a few weeks ago he went out and these berries were looking perfect, but my nephew Bowden was going for a visit the next day, so he left them. He went back the next day with Bowden, and every single berry that had been perfectly ripe and ready to eat was eaten by the birds. So
we planted a whole bunch of patches of strawberries around our yard this year, and we every day we take a little garden walk, and my wife loves garden walks. So and then we say, okay, that strawberry is going to be ready tomorrow, and then we come back tomorrow, and
it's gone.
Yep. Those little blackbirds, they got them.
Every time.
Yep.
All right. Here's another text from Andrew in Mormon. Good morning, Rick and Jill. I have two pear trees and they have lots of fruit on them, but I can't get them to ripen. They go from very hard to rotten. I'd like to know what I'm doing wrong.
Yeah. It depends on the variety also. If it's the old or John or David pears, it's really hard to get them. It depends on the season, right? And they're very hard. But some of the new varieties, like Welcome, Prairie Welcome, or Golden Spice, or Early Gold, they tend to ripen better. So getting the right variety that are more improved is probably the best way to go if you're going to plant a pear. But to get them to ripen, bottom line is that just keep your plant healthy and get them to, with the right moisture and everything else during the season, and just hope for a good season for growing, right? But keeping it healthy is the one thing. Using a fruit and berry fertilizer, not a high nitrogen fertilizer. You don't want to use that on fruit trees. And then, it has all the micronutrients like boron, zinc, magnesium, everything else, just to help that plant be healthy, to produce, to be able to ripen quicker. And then The plant, I mean, if there's another big tree around that's shading it all the time, I mean, pruning, thinning that tree a bit so that the sun comes through and hits your fruit tree, that may be the reason. There's a whole bunch there. But
and picking them at the right time. So a lot of pears, you have to remember, if pears will ripen off the tree, actually. So they'll actually ripen once they hit the ground in nature or once after they've been picked. Yep. So making sure that you don't leave them on the tree too long and then they'll just rot on the tree. You have to pick them at the right time and then store them in a dry, cool spot.
And that just reminded me of something, but you can do it too, is that because there's pears, there's so many that thin them.
Yeah.
If you thin them, that'll make the other one, all the energy go to the other one to make the other ones produce better. Mm-hmm. Okay.
When it comes to the right time, is it just like trial and error, or are there signs that you should be watching for that it's time to pick your pears?
Well, it pretty much depend on the variety. So I would do some research on the variety.
You're all going to be picking them in September on pears. Yeah. So that's just the length of time it takes. So it's September. You'll be early September. You can start pretty much.
But all the pears that are hardy here in Saskatchewan, they are quite a hard pear to begin with. Yep. So they aren't like your lush, big pear that you find in the grocery store. They're a smaller pear and they are quite a bit more firm than a regular pear.
Perfect. All right. We're going to take a quick break. If you have a question, give us a call, 1-877-332-8255. I'm Brittany Caffey here with Rick and Jill Van Dyvendyk, and you're listening to Garden Talk on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME. Good morning. Thanks for joining us. I'm Brittany Caffey here with Rick and Jill Van Dyvendyk. If you've got a question, give us a call, 1-877-332-8255. Right now, we're going to go to Kyle on the line in Edenwald. Good morning, Kyle.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you guys doing?
Very well. I'm very well.
Good. Okay, question for you. I'm on an acreage. I got about 60, well, it is 60 trees on each side of my lane. They're spruce or evergreens. I'm not really sure what they are. I just bought them off on Kijiji, but they're all the same kind type of tree. But I have some that keep going brown. I've got replacements. I dig them out. I change them, and some stay good. But in some spots, they just keep going brown to a solid brown stick. I'm just wondering why, or if there's something I could do to the soil.
If it's in the same spot, yeah, it has to do something with the soil right there, or yeah, most likely with the soil. And it could be a strip of, you know, alkaline soil. It could be a strip of sandy soil. It could be all kinds of different things, right? So doing a soil sample would be the biggest thing to do, first of all. You know, finding out what the pH of the soil is, number one. And make sure when you do that, you can pick that up, the kit, at any garden center, but use distilled water. You have to go to a pharmacy and pick up distilled water to do the test. Yep. Don't use your tap water, okay? And then find out what the pH of the soil is there. Once you know the pH of the soil, then you can find out. It should be around, you know, 6.5 to 7.2 in that range. And if it's up anywhere 7.4 or higher, then you know you're going to have an issue in that area. So you need to use a, you know, elemental sulfur or something to help lower the pH of the soil, right? There's a lot of, even in the farming communities, there's lots of new stuff. You hear the ads on the station with Top Gun, you know, Top Crop. They have lots of stuff for fixing, you know, saline soil and that kind of stuff. So you may have to work with that to be able to fix that before you're going to get them to grow.
I will check that out. One last thing is, should a guy fertilize them? I mean, I've been out to Dutch Growers there on the highway by Regina and bought that stuff you mix into my big water tank whenever I water them.
Yep.
I can't remember what it's called off the top of my head, but should a guy do that? Fertilize them often or just kind of leave them alone? Or?
Yeah, no, fertilize them. You're too late now for the evergreens, okay? They've basically set their terminal buds now, pretty much. Like mine have set their buds for next year, okay? They did all the growing. My pines are still doing a little bit of growing, but they're starting to set the terminal buds as well. So you want to start fertilizing in May, you know, around Mother's Day. They do most of their growth in the month of June, okay? So you want to set the banquet table in May, so that when the feast and growth starts happening in June, there's lots of food. They just give her. Okay.
That's exactly what I did. Did it all on Mother's Day. So,
yep.
All right. We'll keep checking them out, and I'll do that soil test, and we'll see what happens.
And check that soil test in a few spots, because all your trees will love to know what the pH of the soil, and if you can fix it, your spruces will grow even better.
Sounds good. Thanks for your time.
Okay.
Awesome. Thanks for the call, Kyle. I always find it very interesting. I think a lot of people would assume if you're not a gardener or a farmer that it's just like, okay, throw a seed in the soil and let it go. You'll be fine.
Nope.
You have to be like a scientist / detective, it seems, to figure some of these problems out.
Now even the farmers, I mean, they're using drone technology and, you know, AI and everything else to figure out where they're going to put the fertilizer in the fields and different parts of the fields in the same section. They'll fertilize differently in that same section, you know, of field. So because now they have to figure out what the soil actually needs.
But you also have to remember that it is not rocket science either. So it is something that anybody can do. But we were talking about fertilizing, and that is one thing I did want to bring up today because we've passed that July 15th mark. So your maples and birches and your evergreens, you don't want to fertilize at all because we need these plants to start shutting down for the winter. And if we start fertilizing now, you're going to promote new growth, and then these plants are going to have a lot of winter damage on them.
The only time you can fertilize it, if you haven't done any fertilizing for years, you can put an organic type fertilizer, not a very high nitrogen at all, and putting some sulfur and some iron in the soil.
But if you have that 30-10-10, please don't do that.
Don't start doing that.
Is there anything that you should still be fertilizing and keeping an eye on at this time of year?
Your annuals, you can fertilize. Your vegetables, you can fertilize. Some of your perennials, you can even fertilize right up until the 15th of August.
Shrubs are pretty good until about the 1st of August. Then I start slowing down, you know, but hydrangeas, I really started slowing down because I want those to shut down in time, you know, so that we don't get a early frost in the, don't want to talk about that early frost.
Yeah.
Now,
you can't say the F word on the radio.
So there's, you know, definitely by August 1st, the shrubs.
Perfect. All right. We're going to take another quick break. If you have a question, feel free to give us a call, 1-877-332-8255. I'm Brittany Cafe here with Rick and Jill Van Dyvendyke, and you're listening to Garden Talk on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME. Thanks for joining us on this Sunday morning. I'm Brittany Cafe here with Rick and Jill Van Dyvendyke. If you have a question about your yard, your garden, give us a call, 1-877-332-8255. Rick, I hear you've been building something interesting in your yard.
Yeah, we have out of the lake, we also have a pool there. So we have, the kids are all on their bare feet all the time. So I built an outdoor shower. And so what I did is I went to the nursery, and we had some old green ash at the nursery that, you know, had about over 14-inch trunks on them. And they're pretty tall, you know. And so what I did is I cut one down last fall, one that was unique looking. It wasn't a straight tree, nice, symmetrical. It was branches here, leaning over this way and everything else. And so I cut it down and brought it home. And then this last week, I got my neighbor's Zoom Boom, and I was able to, you know, dug a hole, and I planted it basically and put crushed rock in around the trunk. And then
he's been sitting there with this chainsaw and carving out places of it to put the pipes.
Yeah. Put trails up the stem. So then what I'll do is I'll foam them in and put moss on them to cover them up again. And I got a big long bits, and I drilled the hole right through it to put the shower head. And so
they got visions of vines growing up this tree, and then my mom's going to put like pockets of chicken wire and moss on there.
I got micro tubing.
Grow some plants on this thing. It's quite the tree. It's very, very large.
Put micro tubing up into the tree as well, so I can get, you know, drip irrigated and everything else. And so the cocoa fiber pots, baskets I'll put up there and put flowers in them. I turned the water on last night for the first time, and it works perfect. Everything works perfect. So I got two heads, one up high that comes down for the regular shower that pops out of the trunk. And I got one that I drilled down lower for a foot wash, you know, and that kind of stuff. So yeah, it's
my parents
cool.
Have always said, if they can build it, they will come. They want the grandkids to hang out
the time. The grandchildren. Yes. Come wash your feet.
But stay clean and don't track the dirt through the house.
Yes. Always got to keep that in mind. All right. We're going to head to the text line. If you have a question, you can always send us a text or give us a call, 1-877-332-8255. This is from Jack in Warman. About 3 years ago, I dug up and replanted some spruce and balsam trees from up north. they've now started to grow, but I noticed that a few of them have a double tree growing.
Yes.
Is there a safe way to separate these and replant, or should I just remove one of them by cutting them out?
It all depends on the most likely best to remove one of them, like trim it out, because a lot of times what happens is that they've actually joined together right at the base of the trunk, or they split up into a V because the main leader got damaged when it was younger and it got, you know, up higher up the off the ground, it split into two. So it all depends on the circumstance. But I mean, depending with the size of them are right now, if they're just little guys, you can dig them up and if they will split, you can split them. But most likely they're joined at the root. And so the best thing to do is just leave them either as a double trunk. There's lots of trees I've seen around. I saw some just the other day that had double trunks, and they're beautiful trees, you know. So
now, what are some things with that double trunk? Sometimes you can get some snowfall on them and they can split down the middle.
And that's what you have to watch for, how the trunk comes out. If it comes up and it's a Y, but if it comes out as more of a, you can see it's stronger, like right from the root, then most likely those ones will be good. So okay. It all depends on you can basically.
Big it is before it starts Y-ing.
Exactly. And most times, like I said, nature does this thing a lot of times. I mean, this year I had a lot of trouble with those little blackbirds, and they kept perching on the top of my spruce trees and knocking the tips off of all of them. Next year I'm gonna actually just tie on some pieces of bamboo so they perch on the bamboo rather than knocking off the tips. So nature does all kinds of things where moose nibble on them or elk nibble on them. Two leaders come on. So you'll see a lot of trees that are naturally that will grow that way. So,
but most of the time you're wanting to find the strongest leader. Let that one go up, trim the other one off.
But you got to do it sooner than later. Yep.
Perfect. All right. Here's a text from Debbie in Nipawin. Should you cut raspberries down every few years?
Just what I like doing is raspberry. The only one I cut down even every year is the primal canes, like the Red River and Double Delight. They're the ones that produce in the fall. They're smaller raspberries, but you can go take the lawnmower in the fall and mow the whole thing down. And then next year, it produces new canes and then has raspberries a little bit later in the season, okay, every year. But other ones, the normal ones that like the Red Mammoth, the Red Bounty, the Boyan, the gold ones, you know, Honey Queen and that kind of stuff, you want to take the third year canes out every year. So the ones that produce this year, that in the fall, you want to cut them out because the second year canes that didn't have fruit on them are going to produce next year. And you'll keep your raspberry cycle healthy. And here's one little tip you can do. When you get all those canes, especially the older canes, when you cut them down, bundle them, okay, and tie them up in a bundle and make them about 6 to 12 inches long in a bundle and stack them up in different places in the yard, because those are great places for things like different bees, like leafcutter bees and ladybugs and all those kind of things to be able to use them as homes. And that are beneficial bugs that use them the most.
And then you got the pollinators for the next year.
Yep, exactly.
Just setting yourself up for success in every way possible.
There you go.
Okay, in my yard, I have two spirea bushes by my children's playhouse. This year I've noticed we didn't cut it back last year, and now I have what looks like almost dead branches just hanging out in the middle of the healthy branches.
Yep.
Am I at the point where I should just like cut it all back and let it regrow? What do I do?
Yeah, you can do that. If it starts getting really messy, I mean, otherwise, because one time I did that one time. I went in there to try to cut some branches out, but I accidentally cut another branch out, and then I just made another big piece die. Right?
Yeah.
And so sometimes the best thing to do is that. And we got on the windmill at the garden center in Saskatoon. We have a clematis growing all on the sides, and it's beautiful. But sometimes it gets just so woody because it regrows every year from the ground that we just go and chop it right down and start from scratch. And by the end of the summer, it's right back up to the eaves again.
But Brittany, for you, I would probably go through right now and just prune out the ones that are really woody there that you can see that are dead. And then the spring before it leaves out, that's when you can do a little bit of a nicer trim where you can shape the tree a little bit more, or the bush shrub. So that's what I would do.
Perfect. Sounds good. All right. Here is a text from Rick in Alberta. Is there anything new for the control of birch leaf miner?
No, that's the problem, is that once they get inside the leaf, they're protected. So I can't spray them because they're eating the chloroform in between the layers of the leaf, right? So eating the green on the inside of the leaf and leaving the skin on the outside. So the sprays don't penetrate to get them. Now, the
question from a newbie, what is a birch leaf miner?
Okay, sorry. It's a fly that the cycle of what comes out of the ground, and he lays an eggs on the leaves, and then the egg hatches and buries into the leaf itself, and then mines, what we call the leaf miner.
Yeah.
And mines the green part inside the leaf. Okay. And, so leaves all these blotches on your leaves. Now, if there's only a bunch of leaf miners on there, not every single leaf in the whole tree, then it's not going to harm the tree, really. You don't have to really worry about it. And the best thing to do is basically keep the tree growing. That's the number one combat of doing that, keeping the tree healthy, because insects don't go after healthy trees as much as they do on non-healthy trees. So keeping it well watered, because you produce new growth. There's lots of new growth at the end because the miners are going after a lot of the bigger leaves. And so as long as you create new growth all the time, you'll be fine.
And if you're doing any pruning on that tree, you want to make sure you dispose of the leaves. Don't let the leaves just fall to the ground, because then you're going to continue that cycle every year too. So make sure you collect those leaves.
But you have to do them when the miner's in the leaf still. So still hanging on the tree. So, or taking your finger and squishing them, you know, but that's a lot of squishing.
That is a lot of squishing.
Yeah, it's a lot of squishing.
What is the best way to dispose of leaves like that? Are you just bagging them, or what?
Well,
what do you do?
In the fall, it doesn't matter because the insects are backed down to the ground again, right?
True.
So it doesn't really matter anymore.
It's more if you're doing pruning, then you would dispose of them into your compost bin or get rid of them and bag.
What's going to be coming in the future is more nematodes that will go after
certain
types.
And with this one,
of,
it's a parasitic wasp that would actually go after that one.
So there's parasitic wasps, there's nematodes that'll go after them while they're in their larva stage in the ground, waiting to be a fly again next year to come up and lay their eggs. So I want to get them in the ground. And so that's what's going to be coming in the future.
Perfect. All right. We're going to take a quick break. When we get back, we'll chat with Neil on the phone line. If you have a question, give us a call, 1-877-332-8255. I'm Brittany Caffey here with Rick and Jill Van Dyvendyke, and you're listening to Garden Talk on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME. Thanks for joining us on your Sunday morning. I'm Brittany Caffey here with Rick and Jill Van Dyvendyke on Garden Talk. Lots of questions coming through both on the phone line and the text line. Give us a call at 1-877-332-8255. And we have Neil on the line right now, all the way in Winnipeg. Good morning, Neil.
Hey, good morning, everybody. It's great to be on your show. I love the show.
Thank you.
I've got some spruces that I think have some spider mites, and I think I've heard in the past you talk about just spraying them down with some cold water.
Yep. Yeah, they don't like the humidity. They can't reproduce in high humidity, so they don't like that. Oh. They like a dry and hot. That's when they do the best.
Oh, because, I mean, I'm staring at them on my front yard. I've got 12 spruces.
Yep.
And I got one tree that's really, like, you can see where it went from brown to bare, like, within a week.
Yep. Especially in the bottom half, especially in the inside of the plant, right?
Yeah. Like, they are, like, it's not high. It's just right low. And
yep.
Yeah, I can see the little webbing in between the needles.
Yep. So blast them with cold water. And then,
okay, and I can just use my pressure washer on that. Sorry to interrupt you there.
Pressure washer works good because it actually atomizes the water, and you can get blasted right into the center of the tree. Just don't put that wand water, so because it actually will cut the needles in that if you put it too close, right? But it does a great way with misting it and getting it right into the center of the tree.
Okay, so I can just basically stand about, you know, 4 feet away from a tree and just shoot.
Yeah, and do that quite often. Do that quite often. Like, do that, you know, 2 or 3 times a week, right?
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Fantastic to know.
Yeah. And then that way you'll keep the humidity, you know, up in there, and then the insects just won't like it. They won't be able to reproduce and that kind of thing. So you really, you'll never get rid of them all. You're just trying to get the numbers down so you don't lose so many needles, right? And then next year, next May, you need to start fertilizing those trees and get some new growth happening.
Okay. I appreciate that.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Go green.
Yeah, no thanks for the call, Neil. All right, we're going to head.
Was he talking about the Rough Riders or the Winnipeg Blue Bombers? He's calling from Winnipeg, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Go green.
Gotta be Riders. Gotta be Riders. All right, we're going to head back to the text line. This is a text from Mike from Grenfell. What can I spray on my cedar shake roof to kill moss that won't kill my grass after it rains?
Yeah, that's the problem, is that you got to do everything in moderate, right? If you do too much of anything, if you do a whole bunch on the roof and it's all coming down, then you have an issue.
There's a product called Moss Out that you can spray, and
it's okay for the lawns as well.
Yeah.
So that's probably the best thing to use, is using the product that'll work, and that's made for both lawns and the roofs and that kind of stuff. Then you won't have that issue.
Perfect. All right. Here is a text from Carson in Tisdale. I have a row of Cotoni asters, hoping to grow them into a hedge. A small section of 3 to 10 plants are already turning bright red and now dropping a few leaves. The soil is always moist that they're sitting in. Could it be too wet? Maybe heat stress? If you think they're too wet, how do I dry out the soil? Am I too late?
It's aerate the soil. Are these young plants, you said? Are the older plants that have been there for a while?
He didn't specify. But yeah, a row of Cotoni asters he's hoping to grow into a hedge. So yeah. I would assume younger.
Yeah. So if hoping to grow into a hedge, yeah. So probably younger. Because if it was an older one, I'd worry about the bright red or rusty brown. It's a thing called fire blight, right? But if it's a young plant, it probably doesn't have that yet. So looking at what the moisture is a big thing. They're too wet or too dry. Obviously, if it's a young plant,
use the rebar and identify that first.
Identify that first, right? And then soil conditions, like they said, it could be a very alkaline strip depending on how long this hedge is, right? And so checking soil in that area where you're having the trouble as well, and making sure it could be an insect in there that started, you know, like a spider mite affect Cotoni asters as well. So there's a whole bunch of things. If you want, send a picture to info@dutchgrowers.com and we can walk through it in a little bit more detail.
You'll just have to get your detective hat on,
yep.
Carson. All right. Here is a text from Joyce in St. Walburg. Good morning. My husband has been removing potato flowers from the plants. Is this beneficial to promote potato growth?
Well, you need some flowers in there to help produce the potatoes itself, right? So a lot of people will do, and later in the season when they figure they got enough potatoes there, they just want to grow bigger, then you can remove the flowers. It won't matter because then you're getting lots of energy just from the leaves themselves. But you need the flowers at the beginning. You don't want to be picking all the flowers off in the beginning. And unless you figure you got enough potatoes there and you just want those potatoes to get bigger, like I was saying.
Yeah, it will just put less energy into the flowers and more into the tubers.
Yeah.
But you're not going to find you're going to have much of a more increased yield from doing it.
Yeah.
Okay, perfect. Here's a text from Julie in Battleford. I use an organic 448 fertilizer on them. Can I also add bone meal?
On what was that again?
Tomatoes,
yes. Bone meal, you can use. That works great. A great source of calcium in bone meal. Works. You can't overdo bone meal. So it's perfect. Yeah, absolutely. Bone meal is good on all your vegetables and that kind of stuff.
What exactly is bone meal?
It's basically crushed up bones and that from, you know, it is bone meal. It's comes from when they do rendering and that kind of stuff. And so it works awesome. Great source of calcium.
Yeah, perfect. And the numbers she's using on that fertilizer are the perfect ones for tomatoes, so you're good to go.
Why is calcium so important for tomatoes?
Just health. That makes them stronger and healthier. So they resist diseases. That's the biggest reasons that they use calcium for. Just help resist diseases and makes the plants so that they just produce better. Doesn't totally control blossom end right in tomatoes, but helps. Consistent watering is the biggest way you can control blossom end rot for tomatoes, but calcium also is a component of that as well.
Awesome. All right. Another text here. Good morning. I have a honeysuckle tree that has always been healthy, but the last couple of years, it's getting large bare patches. It looks like entire limb sections are dying out. Is there any way to fix this?
Just getting older. If you want, you can rejuvenate it. You know, if like honeysuckle, depending on what variety, if it's Red Arnold, they get around 12 feet tall. Cut it down to 6 feet tall, like once the leaves fall off in the fall, you know, and then create more growth and get it to fill back out again. I know in my plant, I had some in my other acres, there was pure sand because they loved it dry as well. But as it got older, yeah, I lost some branches. And so I just trimmed them off and then started watering and fertilizing them again, you know, lots. And then they started putting up new branches and filling in holes again. So either just, you know, do that kind of thing, but or just trim it back down in half and let it fill back out again.
It always seems so counterintuitive to cut a bunch off in order to make it bigger and healthier. I guess it's almost like getting a haircut to cut off your split ends so your hair can grow more.
Yep, it's like cutting your grass. It still grows in thicker, right?
Yeah. All right. Here is another text from Frank from Indian Head. My Prairie Sensation apple tree had two broken branches due to wind and the weight of the apples.
Yep.
Do you have any suggestions about the wound on the trees to prevent further damage?
Depending on the wound, there again, that's a perfect one. You can send a picture into info@dutchgrowers.com and we can take a look at the branch itself. But it all depends on the wound, because sometimes when they break off like that, they snap off and they rip a big chunk of bark off all the way down the trunk of the tree. Then what I like doing in those kind of cases is that I'll cut off the branch and then I'll kind of clean up so that there's no, you know, little pockets where water, when it rains and that kind of stuff, can sit and rot the bark. So I'll smooth those out. So I might take a multi-tool or Dremel or something like that, or, you know, chisel. And I'll just clean up those areas. Then I let them dry completely. And then I let them heal. And then next year, what I'll do is if you'll see callusing happening along the edges where new bark will grow over top of. And then after that, what I'll do is if it doesn't totally heal over because it's too big of a wound, I'll take some pruning paint the next year and protect the wood from the center core of the tree.
Perfect. All right. We're going to take a quick break. If you have a question, feel free to hop on the phone line, 1-877-332-8255. I'm Brittany Cafe here with Rick and Jill Van Dyvendyke, and you're listening to Garden Talk on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME. For joining us on your Sunday morning. I'm Brittany Cafe here with Rick and Jill Van Dyvendyke. We're nearing the end of the show. We've got about half an hour left. So if you have a question, you're going to want to hop on the phone line, 1-877-332-8255. And we have Violet on the line right now in Maple Creek. Good morning, Violet.
Good morning. I have a question about my poplar trees. They seem to be dying from the top down.
Yep.
And some of them, like, they have leaves halfway up. And what is the problem there?
A lot of times with the poplar trees, it's a borer. So it's an insect that drills into the trunk of the tree.
Yes.
And then mines the inside of the trunk and then slowly cuts off the sap to the top of the tree.
Oh, my goodness.
Okay. And then so once that happens, you just basically got to prune those pieces out. Okay.
Okay.
And
what can you do to prevent that?
Just keeping your tree healthy. Honestly, the borer goes after stressed trees.
Oh.
Okay, that's the number one reason they'll go after them. And those, especially poplars, they have so many leaves, they drink lots of water, right?
Yeah. Oh,
And so if you're just watering your grass, a lot of times it's not enough, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And so, and even the big trees, you know, every year in our yards, we bag up the grass, right? Grass clippings, we rake up the leaves, we clean up everything in the fall, and we leave no food for the trees. Like in nature, the food falls down to the ground and dies there and turns into you know, mold and food from everything else, decomposed organic matter for the plants. And we clean all that up. So in our yards, we have to still fertilize all the time. And that's number one.
I don't do that because mine are in they're around my yard, and I just leave the leaves there.
Yeah, okay.
Then, they're just fall.
Yep.
But it just seems every year there's some tops dying all the time. Yep. I'm wondering if I can paint something. We used to be able to paint some stuff on the trees halfway up.
Yeah, that was called Saigon, but that's no longer on the market anymore.
I know, but I have some on hand.
Okay, yeah. So the best way to do for that is in you can either paint it on the trunk or you can put it into the soil in early spring. Okay?
Oh, yes.
And then,
early spring.
Yep.
But if I paint it on the soil now, is it too late?
It's too late because you need
not
it when
the bark.
Yeah, the saps have to go up. So you have to do it early in the spring when they're taking the saps up. Okay, so that's when it's most effective.
Oh, and you just take a paintbrush and brush it off. That's the way I used to do it before.
You can do that. Just go by the instructions. It tells you how to do it, and then you can paint it on there. Just wear gloves and all that kind of stuff because is a harsh chemical, okay?
Yes, I know that.
Okay.
Early in the spring. And how far up from the root would you start?
From the trunk of the tree, you want to be, it depends how old the poplar, is, right? It was
must be 30 years old.
Yeah, so it's going to be hard, it's going to be hard to get, penetrate the bark of the tree.
Uh-huh.
It's better on a younger tree, you can penetrate better.
I don't have young trees. Mine are all,
old trees. It has to be higher up then, okay? So.
How high would that be?
6 feet plus.
6 feet plus, okay. Yeah. Well, that's okay. Put a ladder on them.
Yeah. Or otherwise, you can drill holes in the ground and you can put it in the ground and mix with water and put it in the ground. You could do it that way too.
And would that be right around the root or bit further away?
Further out at the drip line of the tree.
Oh, my goodness.
Yep. So the best you can, because a big tree like that, the roots go a long ways.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Wow.
So, either way.
Some of them are dead, and then I've had them cut down. Well, then the next year I find a few more all the time.
Yep.
There's about four or five that are still alive.
And it could be too, just telling you, it could be the boar in there, but it could be just a matter of old age.
Lifespan of a poplar tree?
Anywhere from 25 to 50 years. Mm-hmm. Some of the big, big old cottonwoods, I mean, there's some around City of Saskatoon that are probably 75 years old, right?
Yeah.
But
they're really cottonwoods. I don't have any fluff flying around from them.
Yeah, so...
So it might be time to start planting another row of a windbreak, too.
Yeah.
I'm told for that.
Awesome.
Yeah, okay, then I'll try. And then if I... And shall I paint the ones that aren't... they're still good yet?
If you figure you have boar in them, and I'm not sure, like I said, I wouldn't know unless I saw them.
Yes.
Then you do the ones beside them as well.
Uh-huh. And how can you tell if it's a boar or not? Is there any sign outside?
You'll see sawdust. You'll start seeing sawdust at the base of the tree.
Sawdust at the base of the tree. Okay.
Yep.
Okay. I will do that.
Thanks so much for the call, Violet. All right. Now we have John on the line out in Estevan. Hi, John.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I have a couple of questions about the kangaroo apples.
Yes.
So I'm growing my first one this year. Very cool. It's big and it's got a lot of fruit on it.
Yep.
I was wondering, should I be thinning some of that out? Like it's probably about 4.5 feet tall and it's got 50-ish apples on it right now.
I mean, you can thin it out. The other thing too is each one of those is going to create a seed pod and you're going to be able to collect the seeds off of them and you'll have a million kangaroo apple seeds that you can start, you can save in just an envelope and then you can plant them up for next year too. But it's kind of a cool plant, isn't it?
I love it.
They're big. Mine grew huge.
And that leads into my other question. Like I was growing it to be like show plant. Like I wasn't really, growing it for the fruit.
Yep.
So is there a better, what fertilizer should I be using it to focus on like foliage and growth over fruit production?
Yeah, I would just use a 20-20-20 fertilizer, something that's 20-21? Really well-rounded. Early in the spring, you can do a 28-8.
Okay.
20, so something with a little bit lower middle number. That'll just help promote the new growth, but just an all-rounded 20-20-20 fertilizer would be perfect.
They grow so fast, they're hungry.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I've noticed. It's like it's in a half or a third of a barrel.
Yep.
And it's like... going through water now.
Yeah,
every day.
That tree is really pretty. So it's a kangaroo tree or a kangaroo apple tree, and it's an annual here in Saskatchewan.
Yes.
You plant it, and it gets into this nice sort of shrubby bush, and it gets beautiful flowers on it, and then a little bit of a fruit. So if you're wanting something unique that takes up a bit larger space, that's kind of a cool one that you can pick up at the garden centers, and it will be like kind of in the unique plant section.
My grandson or your son, Jill, this spring, Kim, my wife, had him pull him out for him, and he couldn't pull him out, so he went and got the quad runner, hooked up a rope to him and pulled him out, because they're big plants and big root systems on him.
So Bo is 10, and he's quite, he can figure out how to do almost anything, that's for sure.
Awesome. Okay, thanks so much for the call, John. All right, we're going to head back to the text line now. This one is from Sharon from Big River. We've moved and we're planning to put down a small area of sod. The existing area is clay. I'm wondering how we prepare the area. Should we add some topsoil, screened manure, knowing we'll also need to water lots as we've only had half an inch of rain since spring?
If it's possible, depending on how the grading is, you should add 4 to 6 inches.
Okay.
The more soil you add, the less fertilizing and the healthier your lawn will be, okay? Mm-hmm. If you can add, but sometimes your grading doesn't allow you to do that. So you, otherwise, in some case like that, you got to remove the clay to add topsoil, right? If you can't change the grade that much. But adding 4 to 6 inches is huge. Otherwise, you'll be fertilizing and your lawn will look peaked and the ants will be in there and everything else if it's not a healthy lawn.
Is this a good time of year to lay sod?
Absolutely. All season, right up until freeze up. I mean, the sod farms, you can put them down. And as long as you don't go on holidays right after, and because you need to water it, because it has to
be home
roots.
For 2 weeks afterwards. And
yes,
Brittany, these cooler days that we're having this week, it's perfect. Oh,
perfect for planting sod. Absolutely.
The dream and sodling day.
Planting shrubs and trees and that kind of stuff. Perfect kind of weather for it too.
Mm-hmm. Perfect. All right. A text here from Anne in Saskatoon. I have a hydrangea that's not blooming. It bloomed last year, but not the year before. I think it's a panicle hydrangea.
Yep.
Maybe a bobo. I didn't cut it back because the season, it didn't bloom. In the spring, I cut it back a bit.
Yeah, need to cut it back at least a third, okay, in the spring. Every spring, cut it back a third, and you need to fertilize it. And you also need to add aluminum sulfate. They unless the pH gets down around 6.5 to 7, they won't bloom very much. So bring the pH down of the soil. It's huge. I mean, Jay's another host in the thing. He says he can't get his to bloom at all until he started using aluminum sulfate. Now his blooms all the time.
Yeah.
So,
and if it bloomed the first year that she planted it, it might have had the bloom set from the garden center. But if you plant it in an area that's too shady, it also won't bloom too. So it does need like an east location. You need to give it at least 6 to 8 hours sunlight a day.
Yep.
Perfect. All right, we'll take another quick break and we'll be back to answer more of your questions. I'm Brittany Coffey here with Rick and Jill Van Dyvendyk, and you're listening to Garden Talk on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME. Good morning. Thanks for joining us on your Sunday. I'm Brittany Coffey here with Rick and Jill Van Dyvendyk. Earlier on in the show, we were chatting about my neighbors. They have strawberries planted in their yard and they have rocks in their strawberry beds that are painted to look like strawberries. We got a text from Daryl in Maidstone. He says, paint the stones and place them before the strawberry flowers even appear. The birds will try to eat the rocks and then will leave the fruit alone as they now think the berries will harm their beaks.
There you go.
So perhaps there is a method to the madness.
A deterrent, right?
Never heard that one, but that's a fun little task for the kids to do, too.
Yeah, paint some rocks for mom so you guys can actually enjoy your strawberries. All right, here's a text from Greg in Regina. We've noticed little white moths flying around on our front lawn lately. I think they might be sod web worms, but there's no lawn damage yet.
Yep.
We can't use chemicals because of our dog, and most stores around here are sold out of nematodes. Is there anything else we can do?
If you're not going to use chemical, just nematodes is the way to go.
Okay.
Yep.
So just keep an eye out for them.
Yep.
Would like aerating or keeping your lawn healthy and watered or any of that kind of stuff?
Absolutely, because they're going to be chewing on the roots. So keeping your lawn healthy so you get new growth all the time is going to be huge. I mean, and keeping a lawn really nice and thick will sometimes, you know, help deter a lot of insects from being in there as well. So
grabbing a bag of that groundskeeper fertilizer would help too.
Keep them well fertilized. Yeah, if you haven't fertilized the summer one, now is a perfect time in the middle of July. Basically, give your summer fertilizing right now, but try to find one with a zero of phosphorus, higher nitrogen, like 23 or higher, and then zero phosphorus and then potassium and even some sulfur and some iron in it. That's the fourth and fifth numbers. Then that's perfect for you to have a nice green lawn to be able to combat those kind of insects and that kind of stuff.
Perfect. All right. Here's a text from Jordan in Estevan. I have jalapeno peppers in old mineral tubs. The tubs are well rinsed. Everything else is growing in them fine. However, my jalapenos, as soon as they finish flowering and they have a little pepper on them, the stem turns yellow and they fall off. Is the soil too wet or is it lacking nutrients?
It sounds like more like a nutrient issue, but unless I did a soil analysis, that'd be really hard on that type of, because different plants react to different things. Okay. But jalapenos, you want to make sure, because Jill, you probably can chamber in this one, but jalapenos like to, they like to have like an organic type fertilizer. There again, not too much phosphorus, not a ton of nitrogen. Okay. And then all those micronutrients in as well to keep it, and making sure that your pH of your soil is especially around 7 on those. You don't want them, if you go up 7.4, especially if you get 7.5 and higher, then you'll get the yellowing of the stems and everything else too, because they can't take up the nutrients anymore.
So, but speaking to the soil as far as the water, the only way you can tell that is by sticking your finger in the soil. Yep. So stick your finger in the soil about 2 inches down. It should feel slightly dry to the touch before you're watering. You don't want to keep your plants wet all the time. So that's really important. The other thing is, if it's a smaller container, and it said it was a metal container.
Yeah. A mineral container.
Mineral container. Yeah. The soil could heat up quite a bit there too. And that heat on the roots could also cause trouble later on too. So I'm not sure if that's an issue, but if it's in a hot, sunny area and the side is heating up, that also could be heating up the roots, causing some issues too.
All right. Sounds good. Okay. Here's another text. No name on this one. Could you give me some tips and instructions for pruning tomatoes? I'm growing one in a self-watering pot I made from a large storage tote, and my plant is jungle-like.
Amazing. So it means that you have an indeterminate variety, which means that the plant is just going to continue growing up and up and up, means it needs staking and pruning. So you can put a tomato cage around it, or you can put a stake and do the string method too. And you can see lots of different videos on TikTok, Instagram, and YouTube on how to do that. But one of the things when you're pruning is you'll see the main stem come out the leaves, and then you'll see little runners come out right out of the middle of that sort of Y section on the leaf. Those are the runners that you want to be pinching out. And that's really important to do as you're going. Also, the large leaves, as the plant matures, you could prune off some of the lower, larger leaves, or even cut those larger leaves in half. It'll help promote more energy towards the fruit.
Now, you call them runners in a lot of the videos. I also call them, sometimes they call them suckers, right?
Yeah.
So when you're watching those videos, runners, suckers, same thing.
Yeah. Perfect. Here's a text from Cheryl in Saskatoon. I have a problem with some shrubs that are still in their nursery pots. I have 2 variegated dogwood and 2 autumn glow 9 bark. We were away for several days and the shrubs did not get watered properly, so they really dried out.
Yep.
They all have dried leaves. The dogwood ones seem to be recovering, but the 9 wood are taking their time.
Yeah, it'll come back.
Yeah, so she said she pruned them back, removed all the dry leaves. They've been watered and fertilized.
Yeah, make sure they're hydrating that root ball. If it dries out, you need to slowly water it again, because that root ball is so dry and it's shrunk in the soil.
Yeah.
You know, and so what happens, you need to just slowly water. So I watered a little bit, and then I go away and I come back and water it again, and I go away and water some other plants, and I come back on. I'll do that 4 or 5 times, so that root ball is with the capillary action of the water, it's soaked right down to the bottom. If you just give it one watering, it's, you know, you think it's going to go down to the bottom, it's not. The water's going to spread out and just hydrate the top 2 or 3 inches. That's all.
Get those plants in the ground. That's another thing too. Get them out of that pot, get them in the ground. You're going to be able to keep that plant hydrated better in the ground than you can in a pot.
And if it's still in the pot, and you still haven't planted yet, stick it in a tub of water and then let it soak.
Perfect. Here's a question from Alice from Wynyard. Our mountain ash has dying yellow top branches. What's wrong and how do we treat it?
Okay, mountain ash, yellow.
Yeah, mountain ash, yellow dying top branch.
Yeah, so mountain ash is very susceptible to pH conditions in the soil. There's one that I pass all the time going to your house on Kingsmere Boulevard that's very chlorotic. It looks yellow. It doesn't look normal.
I know which one you're talking about.
Right? And
so are you guys the people who judge everyone's trees?
No, trying to help them.
Trying to help them, yeah.
So you're the person who goes up and knocks on their door.
So what you want to do is that it's going to need iron, okay? That's what the thing is. And iron is a simple fix to it, but the long-term fix is lowering the pH of the soil, because they're very susceptible to high pH, where they turn yellow because they can't take up, mountain ashes can't take up nutrients if the pH is too high. And then that will cause the chlorotic leaves in it as well. So just put iron on there right away. And then also some aluminum sulfate or some sulfur to lower the pH. And then, and with fertilizing, you can fix the problem.
Perfect. Well, that's all the time we have for today. Thanks so much, Jill and Rick, for joining me. Hope everyone has a great rest of their Sunday. I'm Brittany Caffey here with Rick and Jill Van Dyvendyke, and you've been listening to Garden Talk on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME.